Hello everyone, it's George from Ireland, so welcome back to my channel. Yesterday was the 60th anniversary of the state funeral of Sir Winston Leonard Spencer Churchill. He actually had a double barrel surname, Spencer Churchill. Not a lot of people know that, but at Harrow School they had to process in alphabetical order. He disliked being so far down the alphabetical order, he said, drop the S, I'll just go by Churchill. Okay, so come from a ducal family, born in Blenheim Palace, and all the rest of it. So that was an almost unique honour to be accorded to a commoner, to be granted a state funeral. The only other one who was given such a funeral was Admiral Lord Horatio Nelson. Margaret Thatcher's funeral was apparently an official funeral rather than a state funeral. So Churchill, why was he given this singular honour? Well, the blindingly blatant reason, of course, he was Prime Minister through most of the Second World War, from the 10th of May to late July, 10th of May 1940 to late July 1945. So in the hot seat for when the United Kingdom, indeed the world, was really at stake, coming back in as Prime Minister 1951 to 55. So he served as Prime Minister for about 9 years in total. He was a real Renaissance man. He was the public school's fencing champion. He could declaim the whole of the Lays of Ancient Rome by Lord Thomas Babington Macaulay. He won the Nobel Prize for Literature. He wrote his history of the First World War, various other things. An outstanding journalist. He published more words than Shakespeare and Dickens combined. That's several million words. So he was a man of the most extraordinary energy and creativity. Admittedly, it was sometimes his research assistants, his ghostwriters, who did a lot of his writing in the 1950s. He had a stroke in about 1954, which was hidden for the public, getting slightly gaga. His son-in-law, Soames, forging his signature and official documents. He didn't get on very well with his son, Randolph Churchill, was a complete nincompoop, roaring alcoholic and like walking disaster zone. But come back to Churchill. So kings, queens, presidents were there. Charles de Gaulle, his friendly enemy from the Second World War, was there. I can't remember who said of his funeral, it wasn't a funeral, it was a triumph. And someone who had played a small part in politics later on, Nicholas Soames, Churchill's grandson, he was there. You can see him as a very chubby 17-year-old. Later, Tory MP, Minister of the Armed Forces, stood down from Parliament about 6 years ago. So that was Churchill's funeral. I remember reading The Abolition of Britain in 1999 by Peter Hitchens, who was this curmudgeonly reactionary journalist, brother of Christopher Hitchens. Even though politically they're poles apart, there are certain striking similarities between the brothers. But on to younger brother Peter, and he compares and contrasts Churchill's funeral in 1965 with that of Princess Diana in 1997. Now, the differences are very notable. Churchill was 90, a good innings these days. But in the 60s, that was almost unheard of to live at that age, especially when, as Boris Johnson said, Churchill loaded the dice against himself with constant drinking, smoking cigars, and indeed flying a lot around the First World War, when flying was, you know, almost suicidal, being extraordinarily valiant in various battles. Whereas Diana died at 36 in a car crash. Nobody saw that one coming. Churchill's death was not unexpected. He'd been in very poor health for 10 years after those strokes. Rehabilitation from strokes in the 1950s was not what it is today. He'd retired from Parliament a few months earlier, so the Queen ordered to be given this this state funeral. And that's why all those soldiers marched in procession. He'd laid in state in Westminster Hall for the public to file past for 3 days before his casket being borne on that gun carriage all the way to, was it St. Paul's, then going by boat up the River Thames to Westminster Station, Waterloo Railway Station, and then to Bladen, being laid to rest about a mile from where he was born in Blenheim Palace. I've been to his grave, I should film it again. And it's very plain, very simple. It has his years of birth and death, and one word, Churchill. A man whose name speaks for itself, who needs us no introduction, which is why he parried all offers of being elevated to the peerage, being made Duke of London. He did accept being Warden of the Cinque Ports. Died exactly 70 years to the death of his father, who was cut down at the age of 46. sometime Chancellor Exchequer, talked about as a possible Prime Minister. So Churchill was also trying to achieve the things his father never got to achieve, who was stricken by syphilis relatively early in life, when that was an incurable condition and regarded as deeply shameful. So one of the reasons Churchill was probably faithful to his wife was sexually a bit coy. I mean, he had five children. He wasn't that frigid, but he was not going to be shoving it just everywhere. They say power is an aphrodisiac. Was that Henry Kissinger? But Churchill wasn't so into the flesh, more into drink. But you see how his reputation is so tarnished now. He was a man of his time, born in 1875. He had the white supremacist assumptions, which were commonplace at the time, which not to say he hated non-white people, but he just thought that whites should rule. And that was self-evident, because that was the world he grew up in. Of all the racial prejudices, one he did not have was anti-Semitism. He was an outspoken philo-Semite, so much so he said, well, I can't say any injustice will be done to the Palestinians if they're uprooted in favor of the Jews and so on. He definitely wanted imperial rule to continue. And obviously, there is a very strong case to be made that it was very much for the betterment of people in many countries in Africa and Asia. Who in his right mind would dispute that Africa and Asia benefited enormously from colonial rule at its best? And there were downsides too. But much of what he's wanted is lost. You know, he said this is a war for the British Empire. I did not become the King's first minister in order to preside over the liquidation of the British Empire. But that's exactly what transpired, because he's so enfeebled that he's so bloody white. Or his VJ Day address, that the British Empire now stands stronger and more effectively united than at any time in her long romantic history. Well, he could scarcely be more wrong. Within 20 years of that oration, the empire had almost all gone to dust. But obviously he was against the Third Reich, but he teamed up with an equally genocidal regime, the Soviet Union. So that was obviously very bad news, that the communism became far stronger after the war, something he'd wanted to extirpate after the First World War, a communism. The United Kingdom's diminution in wealth and power, both relative and absolute, was flagrant. And that was because of Churchill's desire. He could have his empire, he could have his war. He couldn't really have both. He tried to have his cake and eat it. Goodness. Saying disobliging things about Gandhi, I don't think that's racialist. And obviously not doing enough to avert the Bengal famine. Now, they couldn't have saved everybody, but they could have saved some people. It was surely the wrong decision not to send more food to India at the time. And I realized some of those ships had been sunk by the Japanese in the Bay of Bengal. Transport was disrupted because the Japanese already got into eastern India. So that's why a lot of bridges and boats have been destroyed to forestall the Japanese advance. But one thing is, you've got to remember, these Indian provinces, they had elected governments. The Muslim League was in charge of Bengal at the time, much of which is now Bangladesh. And the guy who was Prime Minister of Bengal at the time, he's now adulated as the national hero of Bangladesh. So you can't put all the blame on Churchill for that one. Goodness, in the Second World War, did the United Kingdom go too far with bombing German residential areas? I think it did. So he definitely had his flaws, Churchill. But I don't think he detested people of other races or anything like that, and had no objection to non-white immigration in the United Kingdom. Obviously, it was a much, much lower level than it is today. And by the time he died, the UK was about 1% non-white. I mean, I wouldn't care if the UK was majority non-white, but some people would. Churchill, he didn't advocate the decriminalization of homosexuality, but apparently he had gay friends and actually didn't object to it. It once been put about that he was homosexual himself. This is shortly after he left Sandhurst, and he won a lawsuit about that one because it was defamation. So much of what he wanted is gone. I suppose the monarchy is still there. So a lot of free speech is gone. That would be bad news from Churchill's perspective. And I don't think anyone, conservatives in the United Kingdom included, is obliged to agree with him to want what he wanted. I know Euro fanatics have tried to misuse his reputation to say you should vote to stay in the European Union. Well, Churchill was against the United Kingdom joining even the European Economic Community. He encouraged it for other European countries, said the United Kingdom was sort of with Europe but not of it, and believed that the British Empire transformed into the Commonwealth was going to be a force in the world, and the United Kingdom should not join it. Obviously, the Commonwealth turned out to be scarcely a shadow of what he'd hoped for, and that the United Kingdom would somehow bridge the Atlantic connecting Europe to the United States, metaphorically speaking, because of this so-called special relationship with the USA. Remember, he's half American. There was no need to join the European project. So you're to read my conservative case against Churchill, a deeply flawed figure, and he should be regarded as problematic, even from a small c conservative perspective. But I suppose his gallantry, his eloquence, his romanticism, his vision, a lot of that is lost. You see the tawdry politics we have these days. You see the welfare dependency, the wokery, the bigotry, the racism, the sort of things that he would oppose. It's all very deeply dispiriting. And I suppose he can never come back, a titanic figure like that. I mean, he was a man of his time. There's no going back to the 1940s, nor would I wish to in many ways. But that is Churchill. They just don't make him like that anymore. You see who we've got now. I mean, Kemi Badenoch is one of the better ones, politicians. Keir Starmer, he's really just someone not up to the job. Sir Ed Davey, he's not really someone to fill the shoes of Gladstone as a leader of his party. So it's very, very dispiriting. All right. Anyway, thank you for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon. Donate to PayPal, George Callahan, 79@gmail.com. Goodbye.